You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, we didn't speak last week because it was a public holiday in South Africa, May the 1st, and also lots of other places. But also, you've got a story to tell us towards the end of this interview about what you did. But meanwhile, it's a strange time in markets. You know, everyone seems to be waiting for some new pronouncement, some new data from the United States or China, wherever it is. And it's not a selling in May and go away situation, but it's almost like the doldrums, which is a sailing term to say there's no wind, so you're just stuck there. Do you get that feeling as well?
Yeah, look, we're all waiting for information, including the Fed. All looking for this inflation story. Is it coming off? What's it doing? Is it sticky? What's the labor rate doing? So we are all completely data dependent. Now, the Federal Reserve Bank's meeting a week before last seem to be a little bit more bullish about interest rate cuts. And we saw the rand strengthen a little bit, and we saw the share markets go up a little bit. But, you know, next week the data could be bad again. Who knows? Could be good again. So we're all waiting, and this is very typical of a transition point, an inflection point, if you like to call it that, you know. There's a lot of uncertainty when you're at the bottom of the cycle or at the top of the interest rate cycle. And we're just sitting and waiting. And I agree with you. You're just sitting and waiting.
Yeah, but this is a good time. This is a good discipline, Wayne. And you're an experienced hand. I was going to say old hand, but you're not an old hand. You're an experienced hand at this sort of period. Don't force it. Don't look for something to do just because the markets are not going up or down a few percent here and there. Just wait and it'll come to you.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Look, we're all human and we most of us don't like doing nothing. So sometimes in investments, you always feel, I've done nothing. I mean, I'm getting paid to do something and you're almost forced into doing something.
Yes.
And that's one of the big errors that can be made in investments is that you are now somehow feel that you're pressurized to be doing something. I mean, to me, investments is 95% of the time sitting on your hands, absorbing information, reading things, talking to people, going to presentations, following the markets, et cetera, but 95% of the time you should just sit on your hands and do nothing. So what I mean by that is, until a clear opportunity pops up, you should in effect just be hugging the index, whatever your index is, hugging the index with your investment so that you never, if something untoward happens, you're not dead in the water. You'll survive if something untowards happens because you'll do the same as everyone else does. But then that other 5%, when an opportunity arises, then you act, and then you actually go quite big. I was mistaken, and I know this so well, and is that most of the time when these big occasions happen, I've been quite fortunate in that I've been right most of the time.
So you're well positioned, in other words.
I've been most unfortunate in that I've always gone in too soon. I've either bought too soon or sold too soon. And that could be up to a year before it actually happens. 2 years, I don't know. Now, a good example was Kumba Iron Ore 2014, 2015. When this price came down from, I don't know, 600, 800 bucks, hit 120. Damn it, I thought this is it.
But it wasn't.
And I bought at 120 and it went down to 30.
Yeah.
At 800. But that time of falling from 120 down to 30, but those were tough times, eh?
You just
have to literally bite the bullet and say, I believe I'm right looking forward. So I always do it too.
It was Rothschild, the famous banker, who said, you know, you can't buy at the bottom or sell at the top. You've got to give the last 10% to the other people. And I'm sure it was him. Anyway, I'll look it up on the quotes for next week. But you can't buy the bottom and you can't sell the top. We all know that.
Yeah, but I'm consistently early. Now, if I was 50% early, 50% late, then I would say, okay, fine. But so in other words, I always tell myself, if you have a good idea, write it in your diary to act in 6 months' time. because then it'll probably be a better idea.
That's a very good. A very good philosophy, actually. When you eventually retire, you've got two things you can do: carry on with your cars, which of course you will; carry on travelling in the world's biggest rugby fan, and write a book. That's what you should do. People love lapping up books. Yeah,
a lot of people have come to me and said, "No, you must write a book, etc., etc., etc." But that's actually surprising enough not for me.
No. Well, you can get it ghostwritten for you. You can get it ghostwritten by somebody like me.
I wouldn't mind doing some part-time lecturing at universities or colleges and stuff like that, because I quite like presenting to people.
Hmm.
But, you know, the problem is same as business books. There's so many investment books. There's so many business books. I mean, I can remember years gone by, a new business book will come out, and then all of a sudden we've got to change our company to follow this new philosophy. And in a year's time, you don't even remember that book because there's another one out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very true. The market is saturated. It's almost like cooking books. I mean, I walk in sometime, I walk downstairs, yes, and I've got a bookcase downstairs, and every single shelf is stacked with cooking books. And I think, I haven't got enough years left to cook every one of these recipes. I just like looking at them. They're like trophies. It's like you go hunting, you shoot an animal, which is horrible, obviously, and you stick the head of the animal on the wall. It's the same with me with cooking books. What's the point?
Never stick some dead animal head or dead in my house whatsoever.
No, but you mustn't.
Yes. Mm. I also agree with this trophy thing. Something you just want to collect to look at, not to necessarily, you know. Yeah, I mean, lots of time you just, I personally just like looking at some things that I collect that has got no utility value at all. Lucky enough, it's not expensive stuff like jewelry and watches and stuff like that. That doesn't interest me.
No.
But yeah, I get some people want to, you know, collect books and stuff like that. But yeah, as you were saying about investment books and business books, there's so many of them.
Yeah, and quite honestly, most of them are really, really badly written. I know if you wrote one or you had one ghost written, it would be entertaining because you'd embellish it with lovely stories and you'd talk a little bit about food. No one's done a business and food book, by the way. You could have a chapter on value investing and then have a recipe at the end of it. But anyway, I'm rambling on now. There's two companies that I wanted to talk to you about today, which is very much in the moment, is AB InBev. It's doing very well after some announcement. And is that one that's in your portfolio? You're not a drinker. Yes. You have the occasional red wine. But AB InBev, it seems to be coming to life.
Yes. Look, I mean, they had a terrible time after massively, massively overpaying for SA Breweries.
Yes.
I mean, they saddled themselves with debt. They were never going to make an economic return on that purchase for years and years. And I think it's probably 10 years ago now, maybe not that long, but it's something like that since they bought SAB. But out long last, they're getting over the debt. They've also taken a bit of a volume. They're under volume. They took some volume pressure because of a lot of people going to pre-mix and a lot of people swapping across to gin, which is a new fashion sort of thing, and going away from good old-fashioned beer. But that also seems to be, I mean, that's cyclical, because that's more of a fashion than anything else. Beers has been around a lot longer than what gin's been around. It wasn't a bad, and the share was up quite nicely. So it is certainly one we've got in our portfolio.
Very good. Talking about gin and beer, my grandmother, who died in her 90s, used to have a bottle of Guinness every day, and that's okay. It's a stout, but it's still a beer to me. And also a small gin every single day. So she had the best of both worlds. The other company, Wayne, also begins with an A and a B, and that is Absa. And I spoke to a very well-known value investor, super value investor, who moved from Cape Town to New York in the last couple of years. And we were talking and he was going through his theory of value investing and everything. And I said, well, that's all very well. Give us some examples. But the one that he really, really liked, and he's obviously building a position in it, or has already built a position in it, was Absa. And he gave me the numbers, the dividend yield, the price earnings ratio, and everything else. And he loved it. And I've noticed a couple of X's, or tweets, as they used to be called, about Absa. And people seem to like it. Of all the banks, do you like it?
APSA's got the cheapest relative share valuation. So it is truly deep value. All the banks are cheap. Eh? Put Capitec aside for the moment. So I'm not entirely sure whether that's cheap. But the other banks are all cheap, all of them, the whole lot. Yeah. And APSA is the cheapest of the whole lot, but it also probably carries the most risk of all the banks.
Why?
Because it's APSA. I mean, they haven't covered themselves in glory. Now, and that's maybe harsh on APSA. I mean, this marriage with Barclays and then the divorce from Barclays, you know, the wheels could have fallen off and they didn't. And that's to their credit. But you can see predictability of earnings for APSA is probably more difficult than it is for the other banks. So that's why it's the cheapest. So what you got to say is maybe it's not the best bank, for want of a better word, yes, but it is clearly the cheapest. And maybe there's too much bad news in the share price. But the problem is I had this great idea on APSA, I don't know, call it 3 months ago, and it looked super dirt cheap. You know, if you had bought then, you'd have lost money.
So you abandoned the idea, did you?
Yeah. So on the 2 to 3 year view, this thing is absolutely dirt cheap, as are all of our banks. APSA is maybe the cheapest. So if you're a true deep value manager, this, along with the platinum shares and along with a couple of other mining shares, are true deep value shares.
Interesting. Okay.
But you can also ask any true deep value manager, you know, have you bought too soon? I bet you virtually every single one of them will say yes.
Of course, that's the excuse for not doing so well in the short term. I bought too early because I'm a deep value investor and I'm blessed with patience, the patience of Jove.
Yeah.
Wayne, you went away last week. There's not much more to talk about on the markets. Rand's doing okay, et cetera. We've covered all that. You went away last week without telling me you were going to my my hometown. And you told me off air that you'd visited all the sites and you seem to be a bit of a museum hound. And I can't work out whether it's you or your partner that drags you, or she drags you, or you drag her around.
No, it's both of us. We both love it.
Good. Yeah, it is a wonderful day.
We both love museums.
And if you go to the British Museum, which I know you've been to lots of times, it doesn't cost anything. All it costs is a bit of a queue if you go at the wrong time. And you don't have to pay. Well, the last time I went, I didn't have to pay. That's the truth, isn't it?
Well, the British Museum is free, but it's not a bit of a queue. It is a substantial queue to get in there.
Yeah, true.
But it's worth it.
It is worth it.
And I mean, this was not tourist season. This is not tourist season yet. And there was a significant queue. But yeah, no, it was good.
Good. Well, I'm pleased. And I imagine that you couldn't go to one of the world's culinary capitals these days. I mean, 30 years ago, you would have turned your nose up at most of the food that was served in restaurants in London. But now, of course, restaurants springing up everywhere. It's a vibrant restaurant scene. Did you go anywhere that stood out for you, Wayne? And what did you have?
Yes. Well, three things stood out. One, very quickly, I had the steak and Stilton pie.
Oh, my goodness.
At the local pub. Huh. And that was delicious. That was just delicious. And then I went and had a very, very traditional British meal at the market at London Bridge. I forget its name.
Borough Market.
That's right. Mm-hmm. At Borough Market at London Bridge. And I had a very, very traditional British meal there. Penang curry.
Oh, gosh.
And it was very good. But then the special treat was my daughter works for Jamie Oliver.
Oh, I remember, yes.
And he's opened a new restaurant right in the British Theatre District, right next door to Frozen, the theatre that's showing Frozen. And it's Jamie's, I forget the street's name, but it's like,
Shaftesbury
Jamie's
Avenue.
On Marlborough.
I think it'll be Shaftesbury,
no,
Shaftesbury Avenue.
But it's something like that. It's Jamie on Marlborough Avenue or Jamie on Central Street or something like that. I can't remember the name. But very, very nice. And we went there on Sunday and had the traditional Sunday roast.
Oh.
And the vegetables that came were fantastic. We had a little side helping of pork crackling, which was the best I've ever eaten. And then we had roast beef with Yorkshire pudding and gravy, and it was unbelievable. Other people, it was my daughter and her husband and the world's biggest and myself. And between us, we had the beef, the pork, the lamb, and the chicken roast. We each had one. And then we sort of like shared little pieces out. But that was absolutely fantastic. And what was even more fantastic is that my daughter, because she's staff there, she gets a discount.
You love the discount, don't you? It's like buying Absa.
Yeah, well, at those prices, you need a bit of a discount if you're paying in South African rand.
Yes, you do, and it's
probably.
You know, we know each other well enough for you to tell me how much per person were you paying. You probably had one or two drinks.
Yes, no, I know exactly.
How much?
We had some. Let me explain what we had. We had starters, main course, pudding, some coffee, a bottle of wine, some cool drinks, and that worked out to, with discount, about ₹1,500 a person.
Yeah, you see, that sounds a lot, doesn't it? But actually, by London standards, that's pretty good.
It's not.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. And when you think about it, you're eating in one of the best restaurants in London.
Yeah.
And you're not eating there every day, that's for sure. And for a one-off, that price, I didn't think it was that bad.
No.
And I mean, you had a lovely time.
I'm sure you did. It sounds absolutely wonderful. But the interesting thing about that from a business point of view is that Jamie Oliver, when he became super famous, his first book was called The Naked Chef. And then he went on and on with so many other books. I mean, there must be 20 books that he's published. And then he started opening restaurants and he went too fast and too far. And then he got hit by COVID and everything else. And he had to close them all down and people were laid off, etc. But now he's obviously had the confidence to dip his toe in the water again. And start again, which is good. Which is good for your daughter as well.
Yeah. Look, the whole thing with all of those restaurants he opened up, he did go too big, and they were all Italian restaurants.
Yes, Jamie's
and
Italy.
People unfortunately were not prepared to pay top dollar for pasta.
That's very true. You know,
for Italian food.
Yeah.
So now he's starting out. I think he's opened two or three maybe. He's starting out small, but he's giving a very mixed menu. It's not Italian. And, you know, maybe you don't mind paying up for a nice Sunday roast with Yorkshire pudding and roast potatoes and vegetables and all the trimmings. You know, it's different. It would be very different to say I paid that price for a bowl of spaghetti bolognese, no matter how nice it was.
Yeah, he's obsessed with Italy. Rick Stein is obsessed with France. Oliver is an Italian, and his TV programs, when he goes around with the chap called Gennaro and cooks a lot in lots of most exotic Italian dishes, which are fantastic. But I'm glad he's come back home to Britain. Very good.
The food was astonishingly good, and the decor and the service and everything was really fantastic.
Well done. I'm very, very envious now, and as always, very, very hungry. Wayne, thank you very much for your time, as always, on a Wednesday. That's Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at FMB Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.